Chapter 5. HAPES, Galactic Alliance Shuttle, Approaching the Palace of the Queen Mother. The engineering officer aboard the Galactic Alliance Shuttle had a 5-day growth of whiskers, a patch over his right eye, with the edges of a blaster scar peeking from beneath at forehead and cheek, and a dress uniform whose tunic was pulled out from the waistband. Anyone who had served a few years in any armed force would recognize the man, not by his name, not by his individual identity, but by what he was. Clearly, he was a lifelong military man, one who had risen to the highest rank non-commissioned personnel could attain. Indispensable in his role, he could flout regulations and authority with impunity. He was too valuable a resource to court-martial for anything less than a capital offense. New officers appointed over him would try in vain to make him shave, wear his uniform according to regulations, except a prosthetic eye to replace the organic one he had obviously lost in a battle, and treat his officers with the respect their commissions warranted. He would ignore them for a year or two, and then they'd move on, to be replaced by other officers with equally futile agendas. Military personnel would recognize this man, but they would be wrong. Under the synth-skin appliances on his cheeks, under the pasted-on whiskers and cosmetic eye-patch, was Darth Kydus. He sat quietly in the co-pilot seat of the cockpit, monitoring vehicle system diagnostics, assisting the pilot with various checklists, and responding in monosyllables to attempts at conversation. He did perk up, though not visibly to the pilot, when the shuttle in its final descent into Hapen airspace came within sight of the cliffside approach to the palace of the Queen Mother. The entire cliff, towering as high as an office building, had been carved in the likeness of some long-dead Hapen noblewoman, down to the too perfect features and intricately detailed jewelry. His visible eye was alert, taking in every detail, as the shuttle entered the visitor's hangar of the palace, incongruously through the mouth of the giant carving. Following space traffic controller directions, the pilot immediately turned to starboard, sending the shuttle along a series of bay spaces paralleling the giant queen's left cheek. Kydus calculated numbers of Hapen shuttles, crescent moon-shaped Mitel fighters, air speeders, speeder bikes. He noted with satisfaction the continued presence of a Stealth-X starfighter, the one flown here by Tahiri. It was still awaiting transport back to the Jedi or the Galactic Alliance, doubtless still waiting for Hapes's own allegiance to be resolved before it could be moved. The Stealth-X, with its odd, mottled fuselage covering, looking like a patch of starfield with illusory depth like a hologram, stood out, starkly dissimilar to the elegant and stylish Hapen vehicles. Kydus's shuttle, on repulsor lifts, cruised past many civilian workers and military personnel, the majority of them women. Then, directed by flickering landing lights, the shuttle maneuvered into a bay and set down. The pilot, a white-furred Bothan male, turned to face Kydus.
"Why don't you inform our passengers? They may—"
Then he stopped, scrutinizing Kydus's solemn, impassive expression and slovenly dress. His snout twitched.
"Never mind. I'll do that."
He rose and squeezed past Kydus into the main cabin. Kydus half-listened through the partially shut cockpit door as the pilot addressed the diplomat and aides who constituted all the passengers the pilot knew about.
"Are cleared to leave the shuttle, but they do not confirm a meeting with the Queen Mother. Be in for quite a wait."
Most of Kydus's concentration was elsewhere, as he searched in the Force for the distinctive trace of his child. This was risky. Opening himself up to the Force tended to make him easier to detect by Jedi. If Tenel Ka, the only other Jedi-trained individual he knew to be in the region, detected him, things would go badly, Almost immediately, he found Alana, a bright, joyous flare in the Force, not far away as the Hawkbat flew. But between the two of them were countless warriors and security measures. In addition, just finding her through the Force wasn't enough. He had to see her. He opened himself still further, hoping for a vision of his daughter. He felt her presence grow stronger within his senses, and then he could see, as if through a long tube, her eyes and nose. He did not pour his strength of will into what he was doing. That Sithly impulse would not be helpful with this delicate task. He simply waited, became more still, focused on the image. His point of view drew back and away, and there Alana was, all of her, seated on a chair in front of a broad table low enough for a child her size. Directly before her was a set of controls, a horizontal monitor screen divided into several subscreens, one showing a wireframe image of something like a crude replica of a bantha, one subdivided into dozens of colors and textures. In the center of the table was a set of articulated tubes and spindly droid arms. The tubes exuded resins or blew hardening agents upon those resins, while the arms moved and reshaped them. It took Kaidas a moment to realize that the controls allowed Alana to model a toy while the apparatus simultaneously fabricated it, instantly making it real. "I will buy her one," he thought, then pushed the notion away for the time being. He needed something else from this vision. Alana's hair, her clothes. Her dark red hair was at the moment a wave of ringlets that swayed as she moved, and she wore a knee-length blue play dress and white shoes that showed no signs of scuffing. Kaidas breathed a sigh of relief. He had seen her wear that dress before, and it was one of the seven styles he'd had replicated for this mission. He relaxed, letting the vision slip away, but maintaining his awareness of Alana's location. He was almost certain Alana was not with her mother. That was good. He didn't want to confront Tenel Ka. If he did, he would probably have to kill her. That would pain him. And it would be even worse if Alana witnessed her mother's death. Kaidas heard the main cabin's exterior hatch open, heard the passengers descend the boarding ramp, heard the hatch close again. Through the forward viewport, he watched as the diplomatic party moved away from the shuttle. It was greeted and scanned by a half-squadron of Hapen security officers. As the knot of them then moved toward waiting turbolifts, he could feel no one aboard. No one but himself, the pilot, and one other. Finally, the pilot came forward again.
"I hope you're a better card player than you are a talker."
He resumed his seat in the pilot's chair.
"We could be here for days or weeks."
Kaidas nodded. He reached into a tunic pocket as if to withdraw a pack of cards. Instead, he took out a small, expensive holdout blaster. As the Bothan's eyes began to widen, Kaidas shot him in the chest. The blaster was set to stun. The pilot's eyes rolled up in his head, and he collapsed. Kaidas stood and stepped away from the seats. He pushed the pilot over so that the Bothan slumped between the seats, no longer visible from the outside by passers-by at floor level. Though the blaster was highly rated for effectiveness, Kaidas put another couple of stun bolts into the pilot's back to be sure he'd remain unconscious for hours. Then he pocketed the weapon again. Yes, blasters were clumsy and random, to quote an oft-repeated saying Luke Skywalker had picked up from someone in ancient times, but they could be useful. For someone trying to avoid alerting a Jedi-trained opponent, stun bolts were far better than lethal attacks, lightsabers, or anything that manifested strongly in the Force. He went aft, into the cargo area, and spent a few moments unloading baggage cases from atop a large polymer crate. He punched a number into the crate's security keypad. The light beside it changed from red to green, and he lifted the lid. Inside, a solemn-faced little red-headed girl looked up at him. Her voice was high and piping, but unafraid.
"Your beard is nasty."
"Isn't it?"
He stooped to lift her out of the case. She seemed in good spirits, despite the hours she'd had to remain lying down. But the ready supply of snacks and availability of a game-laden data pad had doubtless helped.
"Were you afraid, Tika?"
"No. I really have to go to the refresher. Really, really."
Kytus gestured forward to the narrow door just on his side of the entry to the main compartment.
"Go ahead. And when you're done, we're going to put you in a new dress and do your hair. Then have some fun."
"Good. I want to play."
She dashed to the refresher.
"You will."
Elsewhere in the palace, levels above and many meters away from the visitor's hangar, Queen Mother Tenel Ka stared into a mirror, seeing the worry in the gray eyes of her reflection. A delicate chime sounded. Tenel Ka said,
"Enter,"
freeing the security measures on the door. It slid to one side, admitting her father, Prince Isolde. A mature man, once counted among the most handsome in the galaxy, he had grayed with an inevitable grace and dignity that made him a target of envious anger by anyone who had not aged so well. Had he been a common man, he could have earned a lavish income promoting exercise regimens and health supplements. But the loose-fitting, flare-sleeved blue tunic he wore cost more than a year's such income. He bent over Tenel Ka to kiss the top of her head.
"You seemed to be anxious for privacy. As a good parent, of course I can't accede to your wishes."
She smiled despite her mood.
"You're still a pirate at heart. Disobedient, conceited, cocksure."
"A lovely compliment. Thank you."
He moved to settle on a scarlet divan.
"What has you so upset?"
She shrugged.
"I think it's this meeting with the GA representatives. I can't seem to settle on the right amount of time to keep them waiting. It's a harder choice than usual. It's not just about queenly dignity or meeting the expectations of my court about royal prerogatives."
In the mirror, she saw her father nod.
"You want to see them when they are at their most desperate, when they are most likely to agree to your demands to have Colonel Solo removed from power."
"Yes."
"And you're weighing that against the lives being lost every day in the war."
"Yes."
Isolde considered. Tenel Ka watched him. Normally, she did not need or seek political advice. But her father offered a rare exception. He was not scheming to put himself or some other favorite on the throne. He had decades of political experience, not only within the Hapes Consortium, but also outside in the galaxy at large. Political and, as she had reminded him, piratical, his decision-making was grounded as much in the realm of bloody deck plates as in the rarefied air of Hapen noble maneuvering. Finally, he met her gaze again.
"You've already made your demand of them. At Kuat."
"I did."
"Send these diplomats home. Today. Seeing them would only give them the opportunity to argue with you. Seeing them later gives them the hope that they can argue with you then. Ejecting them from Hapen space tells them that there will be no negotiation. That,
more than anything, will increase their sense of desperation.
She cocked her head, considering.
You're right.
Another series of chiming musical notes filled the air. This was not a door signal, but a communication indicating that the security alert level within the palace had just eased up another notch. This was not an unusual event. Alert levels rose and fell with the frequency and usually meaninglessness of corporate stock values on Coruscant. Still, Tenel Ka had known the reason for the last one. An hour ago, the arrival of the GA diplomatic shuttle, with the usual security disturbances such an intrusion demanded. This one did not relate to any change of condition she knew of. She pressed a button on the edge of her vanity table.
Lady Aros?
A moment later, her chamberlain entered through the same doorway Isolde had used. A woman of that broad span of years, from their mid-50s to mid-70s, when Hapens devoted more and more effort to disguising their ages, and did so with considerable success, she had green eyes, a long, aristocratic nose, and features made for twisting into expressions of disapproval, though she directed only a look of concern toward Tenel Ka. Her gown, layers of iridescent synth silk in gold and brown tones, was appropriate to a Hapen noblewoman, and scarves in the same material and colors bound up and concealed her hair.
Queen Mother! Why the last alert change? I will find out, Queen Mother.
Aros bowed and withdrew. Isolde smiled, amused.
You are nervous today.
Yes, I am. So I have to hope something is actually going wrong. I don't want to pick up the reputation of being unwell.
She repressed a wince. Her mother, Tenennial Joe, had been unwell, sick in her mind, dissociated from reality for a time before her death. Tenennial Joe had not been able to stand up to the emotional shock of feeling through the Force the deaths of thousands of people slain by use of Centerpoint Station's main gun during the Yuuzhan Vong War. Tenel Ka could not afford for anyone to think hers similarly weak. It would be an invitation to another attack, another assassination attempt. Aros re-entered the chamber.
It was an automated elevation of the alert status, Queen Mother. When enough random events occur that the security computers register them, the programs do what is known, I believe, as raising flags, simply indicating—
Tenel Ka gestured to cut off her explanation.
What random events? Small static interruptions in security holocam feeds, but none has lasted more than a few seconds. Security says that during intrusions, holocam interruptions last for much longer periods, a minimum of half a minute or a minute.
They've checked to be sure that the holocam views, once they resume, are current images, not recordings.
Yes, Queen Mother.
Aros's voice was endlessly, unnecessarily patient. Tenel Ka frowned, not convinced, and opened herself to the Force. First, she sought out Alana, and found her, nearby, calm, sleeping. Then she broadened her perceptions, looking for anything amiss. She felt it almost immediately. A short, distinct pulse in the Force. Her eyes snapped open.
There is a Force user in the palace.
She punched additional buttons on the keypad of her vanity, and her own image in the mirror suddenly faded, to be replaced by an overhead view of a child's playroom. She breathed a sigh of relief. Alana was there, undisturbed, sitting at her modeling table, head down as she worked intently at the controls. Her hair spilled around her face, obscuring it. The bantha that had been her newest creation now had four giant bulbous feet. Then Tenel Ka frowned.
A moment earlier, an instant earlier, Alana had been asleep. She keyed in another location, and the view changed to that of the door outside her daughter's playchamber. It was closed, sealed, innocuous, except for the fact that the two guards who should have been on duty there were missing. Coldness, hard as an ancient ice comet, froze her stomach. Tenel Ka stood fast enough to hurl her chair backward. It thumped down on the carpeted floor. She spun on Aros.
Alert security! Intruders in the palace! They're making an attempt on Alana.
From beneath her robes, suited to an afternoon's lounging beside an artificial waterfall, she pulled her lightsaber and dashed past Aros, her father behind her. Security chimes were sounding as the two of them reached the main corridor accessing the secondary royal quarters. Rightward, it led toward Alana's playroom. Leftward, it led to security stations that in turn gave way to less secure areas. Security agents dashed in either direction as noblewomen, pursing their lips in disapproval of the confusion, stayed out of their way. Tenel Ka paused and extended her senses into the Force once more. It took only seconds, seconds that dragged on like hours, and then she felt her daughter again. To the left, and down. She spun in that direction and ran, allowing the Force to lend her speed, leaving her father far behind.